I was listening to a lot of shows from the past year, this past week, and I realized that as often as not, our shows begin by saying that they're a very special EdTech talk. So it's only appropriate tonight that we have a very special EdTech talk where Dave and Jeff reflect on the year that was and the year to come. With that said, welcome to a very special EdTech Talk being webcast live on June 4th, 2006. This is EdTech Talk number 48, which is the completion of our first year of EdTech Talks. And I am
Yay!
yay, I am delighted to be joined by my co-host and webcaster extraordinaire with a super machine, Dave Cormier.
Thanks, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here, and to be honest with you, I can't believe it's been a year.
It's in some ways it feels like more, in some ways it feels like a month.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it has been interesting, and I did listen to a lot of our past shows this past week, especially EdTech Talk number one, which struck me as not bad for a first show, and it inspired my thoughts about what to do for this show, which is a combination re-asking of some of the basic questions we asked back then, and another back to basics, what to do for someone just getting into this world of educational technology. So that's the plan, right?
It's a damn good plan. And I think to start it out, Jeff, why don't we start with that first basic question? Jeff, what is educational technology?
It took you a year, but you finally figured out to get the questions in first. Well, a very wise man a year ago said that, well, educational technology can be broken down into three major categories. One being the technology hardware in a learning environment, the pencils and papers and chalkboards and whiteboards and computers and all of the physical technology that's used for education. The other being the computer-based or web-based applications, and that's a huge, wide realm of things that can be subdivided. And the third one being assessment software, which in EdTech Talk number one, we never got around to talking about. And this whole year, we never got around to talking about. And I have a feeling we may not get around to talking about it yet again.
Boring.
Yeah, it's just not what we're into.
Very important, very big part of the industry, yada yada yada. Go check it out yourselves. Not interested. Boring.
Now, would those still be the same three categories we divide things into today?
I don't really think so. I think in listening to it, there's a lot of stuff that we weren't really tuned into a year ago. I noticed no talk early on of blogging, which I thought was kind of interesting considering how much of it we do now. Didn't really know where podcasting fit into the whole project back then, and certainly talks with people like Bob Sprankel in the meantime have certainly given us a different feeling about that. And the thing that you love to talk about, and certainly I've been brought into as well, Second Life doesn't really fit in any of those categories either. So I think there's been, if not significant change, certainly a movement inside the industry, and I think as well as away from full out course management systems, the way that we talked about them a year ago.
All right, well, let's approach at least the first two categories a bit. The hardware of EdTech. Have there been any significant advances this past year? What's new in the classroom?
I think the thing that has struck me over the last year more than anything else is less hardware. Is this, little tiny MP3 players that people can just grab and take out and use to make great projects. The LTSP projects where, you can spend $6,000 and outfit an entire computer lab. And how you can do really more with less.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I think of the past year of discussions that we've had in terms of classroom hardware, two things stand out. And one is very forward-looking, and one is kind of backward-looking to use it for forward purposes. One being Will Richardson's tablet PC project, and how he felt that that really made a difference in the way that students produced materials, being able to carry this thing around and write instead of type. The other being Kathy Malz-Bendin's, incredible open source lab built on $20 or free old computers.
And I think they do really represent both ends of the things that are the best about what's going on in the industry right now, and that's the cutting edge of what Mark Hemphill would call M learning, the mobile learning, where you could, the four walls of the classroom are irrelevant, and we just go out and we take off into the world as much as we can, and also a realization finally, hopefully. I mean, I heard a couple of days ago of another very good educator and educational technologist who's lost his place inside the school because they've taken the funding out of people to pay for more and more expensive technology, which I think is a complete waste of time. So I think those two projects, I agree with you, are the two ways that people are best to move, at least.
All right, well then let's move on to the huge second category. And something we didn't really discuss that much on that show a year ago was not non-web-based software. Just the software that's contained on a computer but not necessarily net connected.
Sure.
And we really haven't talked about that much in
No,
the
it's come
past
in
year.
every once in a while. I think the program that excited me the most was Alice, that Lee brought up. Fantastic little piece of software, 3D modeling software, free, downloadable, and very, very cool. What did you like?
To be honest, I'm having trouble thinking of anything that sticks out from the past year. And I'm sure there are great, learning software programs out there, but most of my attention has been focused on the web applications.
Yeah, because it is about connectivity, right? And that's been one of the main themes of the whole show over the last year has been how can you connect with the outside world? How can you become a publisher? How can you become, or how can you help your students become part of the global community? And stuff that's restricted to the front of your screen doesn't necessarily come across that often.
That is a conversation I'd be interested in having year number two. Speaking with some of those software developers and producers in terms of how they're evolving, because so much of it is about connectivity, how are they approaching the issues of security and safety? Are they able to include some kind of online component to their software, but in a safe environment that might make some administrators more comfortable?
Such a big theme this year too, safety, eh?
Which came up in our first show and has dominated a lot of shows, because the flip side of the wonders of connectivity are the dangers of connectivity.
There's a lot of people out there you don't necessarily want to know.
Yeah. Well, moving on to the web-based applications. If we were to do an intro or back to basics kind of thing for someone interested in educational technology, how would we paint the lay of the land for web-based educational technology, and how has it changed in the past year? Phew,
Wow, you
glad I
got
got
that
to ask
question
that
in
one.
there, didn't you? I think you'd have to start with blogging. I know there's a strong portion of the community that thinks that blogging is a passing fad and it's essentially just diary writing. But you talk to Barbara Ganley for 15 minutes and that idea just leaves your head. It's the easiest thing to do. You can go out there. It has a great solid narrative voice. It allows you to do a lot of things that are interactive and yet still keep a lot of control over who has access, who can comment. And I think all in all, any conversation about educational technology online definitely has to include blogging. Wikis, we've done a lot of work with wikis in the last 6 months. I'm still not sold on them, to be honest. I think that they're an advanced technology. I think you have to have a really good idea of how hyperlinking can affect your classroom to really use wikis inside of a class. And I think I've yet to see an ongoing classroom wiki that has been very successful. I shouldn't say that. I've seen a couple of examples. I've not seen a model that you can just give to someone and they could work with on their own. That being said, definitely part of the conversation. What follows next, Jeff?
I don't know. I just want to echo your thoughts on the wiki, how I think the collaboration potential is powerful, but I think partially in its current state, wikis themselves with wiki text are not user-friendly enough. And even more HTML-based things like the collaborative books in Drupal are, I don't know, they're hard to manage. And I think that may be why we haven't seen them being used more in actual classroom environments. I did listen to a very interesting interview with Jimmy Wales this past week on some podcast. And he was pointing out that he really does want to make wikis more user-friendly. So I think that part of it will evolve quite possibly within this coming year. But in terms of the educational implementation, I
It's
think the
pretty
jury
tough.
is still out. Yeah.
Pretty tough.
I would echo what I said a year ago as far as web-based stuff, new media, podcasting, vlogging, webcasting. I think that's where a lot of the excitement has been in the past year, and I think that's where it's going to be this coming year.
And I think the last part of all of this is the CMS and the possibilities that go along with it. And that to some degree includes a lot of the pieces we've been talking about, but Drupal, Moodle, Elg, WordPress, and any number of programs like that. So A-Tutor, Blackboard, and all the rest of that stuff that goes together with it.
A couple of things I want to ask you there. One, in the first show a year ago, when we were talking about open source CMSs, content ma or learning management systems, you mentioned Drupal and A-Tutor and the other ones. This past year, we've talked almost exclusively about Moodle as far as open source things. What's going on with the other ones?
In terms of course management systems,
Yeah.
the open source ones, the only one that I'm familiar with its development is A-Tutor. It's still going. It doesn't have the traction that Moodle does. And with the open universities in Europe and in Canada now switching over to Moodle, considering that A-Tutor is actually a Canadian product, it doesn't look like they're long-term, big-time possibilities are really there. The European open source stuff is still there. They're in small pockets, mostly run by universities. And of course, the Sakai project, which is an American-based open source big money project that developed out of the CHEF program at MIT. And that's backed by any number of huge institutions in the States, a bunch of big universities. And it's going to have traction just based on the money that it's got. Somebody in the chat room just posted that Moodle and Elg have combined, which I think again gives Moodle another edge on the rest of the open source competition. There are
And we should
some.
clarify that they've been integrated, not combined.
Oh, quite right. Integrated. Possible integration. You
Right.
can use one with the other. And as far as the for pay, course management systems, Blackboard and WebCT are still the two biggest ones out there. Stuff like Desire to Learn gets a lot of good press. Somebody was showing me Knowledge Builder? Knowledge Builder? What's the name of it now? A couple of days ago, and that has some really nice features in it too. But again, that's $20,000 a year, which for most of the people that I imagine listening to the show, for what I imagine their audience is, they're mostly people who don't have that kind of budget, or even if they do, they're not looking to put that into hardware, the hardware that it would take to support that, and the licensing fees that would be involved.
Yeah. And kind of weaving its way through all of these things is social networking. First, I always enjoy hearing your definition of what that means. What is social networking, Dave?
Social networking. It's the networking of the social. It's the idea, or at least the foundations of it in my mind, is the idea that any one of us is not going to be able to learn nearly as one on our own as well on our own as we will with a community. If you go out and try to learn how to webcast right now on your own by yourself in a closet, with a little light in the closet and your little computer, it's going to be hard. You're going to wander around the internet. You're going to spend weeks trying to find little bits of information that if you can get some guidance from a community, you save a lot of time. Take that example, bring it to education. With blogging, when you create a social network around, say, language learning, if 15 or 20 people are reading your post every day and commenting back, it creates a natural environment for you to practice, for you to get great models in your language, get somebody feeding back. If you're working on technical issues, you have a vast quantity, like an army of brains all looking for answers. Those things, to me, are all what social networking is about.
I concur. Yeah, I mean, it is. I think this past year has been about social networking for us.
Sure.
You know, it's been about connecting with people with similar interests and learning together.
And so. Certainly, I mean, we've learned so much from the people who have taken the time to come onto the show the last year. Everybody from, you know, the first couple of shows when the Webheads came on in the beginning, and, you know, Will Richardson and Barbara and Stephen Downs and George Siemens and all these people, when they come on, so much learning so quickly. You know, and we go back and you edit the audio for 3 hours and you listen to it again.
Indeed. We'll just mention Tiki Wiki. Someone just mentioned that in the chat room. Dave and I were using that for a personal wiki, kind of our to-do list for a while, and just never really bonded with it.
No.
It was not a very friendly interface, and I mean, it was okay, just not great.
Ah, Jason Robertshaw just posted MySpace in the chat room. We would be remiss if we did not at least mention MySpace once.
MySpace and the whole MySpace syndrome affecting many decision makers in the world of education, which has really gotten going this past year because of all this social networking and the attraction it has for a lot of young people, especially who have not yet maybe learned how to handle it appropriately. Occasionally bad things happen and give MySpace and social networking a big old black eye.
What is MySpace, Jeff?
MySpace is the most popular personal web space that taps into some of these social networking things, site. And so it actually started as a site for musicians to kind of get their stuff out there, but young people, teens, took to it quite readily, and it's kind of like a blog. It's kind of like a post your photos and become friends with other MySpace members and share your life on the web. It's now owned by Rupert Murdoch and has gotten a lot of headlines and press in the past year.
Do you have a MySpace account, Jeff?
I did sign up for one. I haven't been there in a while. You know.
Oh, cool.
Do you?
I think I did. But I don't remember. You know how you do it? You go around, you signed up one day for like 15 different things.
Yeah.
I think I might have on one of those days, but not really. I took a look at it a couple of times. I tracked it through FARC, through various stories that went there, but and have to look around in it. Essentially, like you say, you know, people, hi, I'm Darlene, I'm 21, and I like horses.
Yeah. Anything else we want to say about either all that security stuff or the website of educational technology before moving on?
I'm ready to move on, Jeff.
All right. Well, assessment software, stay tuned to year number 3. Maybe we'll get to it then. Or if anyone would like to do a special show on assessment software, let us know and we'll link to it.
Not saying it's not important. Certainly in a lot of different circumstances, it ends up being very useful in your classroom. It's pretty self-explanatory, though. It's designed to go with textbooks, and it all kind of works together, and I'm not sure that, unless we had developers of this stuff on here, like you said earlier, I can't imagine how we would have very much to contribute to the conversation.
But, you know, it is kind of a whole issue that we haven't dealt that much with, is assessment in a Web 2.0 world. And I think Barbara Ganley, you know, addressed it some in talking about which posts she would assess and which ones she wouldn't, but it is more complex. You know, it's not simply, you know, checking whether answers 1 to 20 are correct or not. It's a lot more complex. And we'll save that for another show. But now we move on to a beginner's guide.
A beginner's guide. What we thought we would do is try to put together a couple of short audio pieces for people who would just like to start, would like to get something done, would like to get involved without having to spend too many hours working through all the complexities of the situation. Now, Jeff and I disagreed about how to actually go about this, so as he's older and more experienced, we're going to let him describe exactly how we're going to break this down.
Uh-oh. Well, Dave had suggested that we go with the easy, medium, difficult, and I believe I was thinking more functionality based, but I don't think we ever articulated what those different categories would be. And I'm okay if you want to do the easy, medium, difficult thing.
Oh, now don't vacillate, Jeff. It doesn't look good on you.
Well, don't, spring this on me. Jeez, we're such a carefully prepared show.
True.
All right. A teacher wants to have a class blog. What are their
Okay.
options?
Class blogging. Learnerblogs.org. That runs on a WordPress, and the learning curve is it's pretty steep right there at the beginning. You'd have to go to learnerblogs.org. Sign up. The sign up process is very simple. You need to put in a name of your blog and I think an email address, and it will set one up for you. You would sign in and play around with what's called the dashboard, which is the main interface of WordPress. Anybody with a basic computer ability, I figure maximum 4 or 5 hours before they're comfortable with it, you could certainly get a post up in 20 or 30 minutes the first time. And then after that, once you got comfortable with it's a very clean, simple interface that has a certain amount of flexibility to it. It's the place that I would send most people. For a slightly simpler interface, Blogger is still up and fully functional. And then there would be the possibility of going out and actually renting yourself some server space. There are also various, if you're working at a university, there are a lot of universities that will set up blogs now for their professors and for people who work there. I don't know if any school districts are doing that yet. I'm guessing some people are, but for the most part, not so muchy. You're pretty much stuck doing it on your own. And I guess the other option would be to run an ELG, which is what we're doing with Personal Learning Space, which is more of a walled garden for blogging. Not that ELG is only blogging software, but it can be used for that.
And you feel that it's, if you want a walled garden, a more closed or secure environment, that ELG would be better than WordPress?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah, because WordPress, you really can't stop people from going there. Whereas with ELG, with a given configuration, you can actually make that happen. And you can lock it down, right? So that only the people that you want to have see stuff can see it using the various group functions inside of ELG. But that's a far more complicated operation. If you want to set up an ELG and just use it, not too complicated. Setting it up so that it's secure, you're going to want to have somebody who knows what they're doing. And you can call the people from Curve Rider, who are the developers of ELG, and you can pay them to do it for you, and I'm sure they'd be more than happy to.
What is the name of that Curve Rider?
I think it's Curve Rider.
Did not know that.
Yep.
All right. So that's our little snippet for a teacher who wants to do a class blog.
So just to recap, Blogger is the easiest. Next, learnerblogs.org. Next, walled garden, or pardon me, after that, get a server and install your own WordPress or Drupal or ELG. And then walled garden would be an adjusted ELG, which is a much more complicated operation.
And not to end on too confusing a note, but if they wanted to do some kind of class blog, would they be better off using a WordPress, a multi-user WordPress, or a Drupal?
Do they need a different voice or can they all have the same voice?
What do you mean by that?
Well, if they're all posting under
No, each one
classroom number
would
eight.
have a separate section. If I want to see John's blog, I can go to John's blog. Yet they all get posted
I don't
in the
think you
same space.
need to use a multi-user WordPress. I think you can set up the users inside of WordPress so that different people can post. I think
Oh
that's
yeah.
true.
Then what's the advantage of a multi-user WordPress?
Well, you have different pages, because that way you're not on my blog, I think.
And I would put a word in for Drupal as well. I think it's a little, you know, when we first started reviewing these, we would always say, well, Drupal is a lot more complex than WordPress, and it is, but it's not that bad. And in terms of this kind of group project, it has some advantages over WordPress.
And every week we get a little bit closer to thinking about Drupal as the killer app, the by far the best all-round application to let you do anything you want to do. And I know Darcy Norman has certainly gone in that direction.
When we were talking about learning management systems, I was thinking Drupal could almost be included in that. It's not, it doesn't have the grading functionality, but, you know, it won't be that long until someone cranks out a module and adds that.
Yeah, and I think overall the distinction between learning a learning system and a course system and a content management system, not huge, you know. The only difference is that grading module, and it's really hard to grade anything to that degree anyway. As soon as you talk about social software, how are you going to grade it automatically? Oh, you were 75% friendly.
Yeah. Just to answer Jason's question in the chat room, no, ELG is not an acronym. It is a word that means some kind of Nordic moose or something.
Yeah, it's a Nordic moose. It's actually in, I think it's the Holy Grail. At the start where they have all the weird subtitling.
Yeah, it's a pretty non-significant word.
Yep.
But a significant little piece of software that we still have a special place for in our hearts.
Indeed.
Okay, that's class blogging. Now a teacher comes to us and says, you know, I hear about all this new media. I hear you even have, like, new media guides and new media forms. What is new media, and how can I do it?
I'd send them to Jeff at jefflebo.com. The entry point with new media, I think, is probably podcasting. It is ridiculously easy to set up a podcast. You do, however, need to have a blog first, because podcasting works on the automated subscription service that makes that are called RSS that makes blogging happen. And now, granted, there are other things like Atom or whatever else that also do that, but we'll not get into that now. So you need to have essentially a blog, and then a $10 microphone, and a free piece of software called Audacity, and you're ready to go.
And I think you're right. I think sometimes new media is made so much more confusing than it needs to be. Basically, podcasting is audio blogging, and vlogging or video blogging is video blogging. And they run on the same basic software. It's called new media, I think, because, you know, we're used to seeing words from lots of people. But we're not used to listening to audio or watching video from the common man. And I think this, or woman. And I think this long tail effect of all this media being produced by so many people is creating an alternative to mainstream media, which would be called new media. Of course, because audio files and video files are larger than text files, it introduces that challenge. Is that you need to figure out a place with some significant storage space and bandwidth to serve up all of this new media. A number of options out there. Video and audio can be uploaded to Our Media, which is partnered with archive.org and basically gives you free hosting. The interface is not especially easy. Have you ever uploaded something to Our Media?
I have not.
I have an account. I kind of started using it, and I did not follow through because I had a couple obstacles along the way. Thousands of people have done it. It can't be that hard, and it's free, so that's always an option. Other places like Libsyn give you very affordable hosting. I think it's something like for $5 a month, you get 100 megabytes extra per month. So month one, you have 100 megabytes. Month two, you can upload 100 more megabytes, unlimited bandwidth. And there's a number of free sites also, things like Gcast and Podomatic that will
Audio.
also audio that make it easy and free, or at least very affordable, to do this kind of stuff.
Or again, you can go out, get your own server space, and install this software and have your own space. And it's not as expensive as it sounds, or nor is it as difficult as it sounds. With what you just described at our media, you're looking at 100 megs and then 200 megs the second month and then 300 megs for $5 a month. If you go to bluehost.com for $7 a month, you can get 15 gigs of space, which is pretty significant and really as much as anybody's going to need, unless they're recording video at huge sizes or whatever.
Which Dave may be doing now that he has his new supercomputer.
So to recap, online in terms of doing some podcasting, odeo.com, podomatic.com. On your own computer, download a piece of software called Audacity from SourceForge and a $10 microphone, and you'd be ready to record, and then you can put it up on your blog and you'll have a podcast. To store your video, Libsyn. What was the other one you mentioned, Jeff?
Gcast.
Gcast.
Yeah. And I
And
also wanted to mention, we've been talking about Bluehost all year because they had this greatest value package for a server space. There are competitors to Bluehost that offer almost the same package that we haven't looked into, but we will be looking into in the coming year. I have heard some mediocre reports about Bluehost support. People who've had trouble with stuff, sent an email, not gotten anything back. No hard statistical data on that, just anecdotal. I get a there, the guy has a blog though, the owner of Bluehost, which is worth checking out. Anyway, many options available for storage of bulky media.
And the truth is here, and this is talking about Bluehost and the support, trying to do this on the cheap, you're always going to run into problems. There's no way for a company that charges that little to be able to actually go out and help you. There is always the option of finding a company that is going to, where you can pay them $5,000, $10,000 a year and they'll take care of it for you. I mean, certainly as an institution, I would advise you to do that automatically. Start out small, try a Bluehost account, but once you actually go into production, call a professional. Call a professional hosting company that has experience with the product that you're using and get their advice and pay them the money. Don't pay for software, pay for support and pay it from people who know what they're doing.
Now, before we get to our final category of a beginner's guide, I just want to mention to everyone to please stick around. We're going to wrap up soon, and after we do, we are going to try to crash Dave's new computer by having a mega Skype conference and test. We've heard about this for months now. The Skype can support up to 10 people in a Skype conference on a dual core. Well, Dave now has a dual core machine. And we're going to take it out for a spin
I'm
while
very
he is
excited.
in Second Life, capturing it on Camtasia and recording on Audacity. So, final category. Teacher comes to us, says, "Wow, this educational technology stuff, it's so powerful. There's so many possibilities, and I just don't know where to begin, and it's so hard to keep up. What kind of approaches can I take for professional development?" What do we say
Professional
to him?
development.
Professional development in the world
Panic.
of yeah.
That's what I would say first, just panic. I mean, this is the place where the whole system falls apart. Professional development is the by far the most important part of all of this. I don't care what software you're using, whether it's WordPress or anything else. Any piece of software, given good application, good training, good experience, and the time to prepare, can be made successful. You need to have that time. You need to find a developmental community. You need to find a group of people you can work with who are going to be able to keep doing this. And this is what one of the things that we've been trying to offer here at WorldBridges, the Webcast Academy for webcasting, certainly is that hopefully the content, what is that called? The CMS Academy will be that over the summer. Find yourself a community of like-minded people who you can learn with. Nobody can learn how to do this on their own. Most people have not been successful trying to get their institutions to find them people who can train them. One of the big reasons for that is there aren't that many people out there who can actually train anybody. Yeah, for professional development, there really aren't that many people who, it's really difficult to know how to do all this stuff and not actually have a full-time job doing it. So there aren't a lot of people wandering around, and some of those people cost an awful lot of money. And again, the best way to do professional development with technology is in small bits, and preferably when you need those bits. So not me saying as a trainer, okay, today we're going to do wikis, but you contacting the trainer and that and saying, hey, I've got this idea, I want to try to do this. And the trainer goes, oh, okay, a wiki will do that for you. And then learning how to do it. I mean, that's the ideal. And hopefully those kinds of systems will support themselves. And certainly part of our, hesitate to use the word, but viability plan as a company is to sometime start offering that kind of professional development. And you can always call Brad Hicks if you're in Southwest Australia. He's a professional. Contact him at Brad Hicks. Brad, how are they going to contact you? I'll plug you, but you got to tell me where you are. Brad Hicks. Call Brad Hicks.
Yeah, and you know, it is an issue that has come up a lot in this past year, and I suspect will continue, and it's usually been in a, oh my God, it's so inadequate at my learning institution.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear good examples. You know, we don't want to always be naysayers, and there have to be institutional solutions. I mean, I think kind of PD by social networking is great, and we're certainly hoping to develop some open source, collaborative, professional development possibilities, but at some point it's going to have to make its way into the institutional levels, and we'd love to see what that's going to look like. So let us know, edtech@edtechtalk.com. Anything else we want to cover as far as beginner guides?
I do. One more thing. I was reading somebody's plan for their educational future, just came out of, I guess, a bachelor's of education or some such like, and they said in terms of web development, they were looking at Dreamweaver. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Dreamweaver, it is web design software. It helps you create HTML and I guess now incorporate Flash and stuff like that into a website. But it allows you to build a website from scratch. Don't do this. Just don't do it. If you're contemplating it right now and you're not already a very good web designer, don't do it. There are many different types of software out there called content management systems, and several of them are quite good. You do need to have some kind of server space to put them on, but you can easily acquire that. We mentioned Bluehost. There are other products that do that. It costs you about $100 a year, but will save you so much pain and misery. What they are is a complete integrated website with authentication, that is, people can sign up and they have to register and you can control the registration. They have forums built in, they have, in some cases, wikis built in, and they allow you to control the look and the design of your website without learning how to do HTML, CSS, PHP, and all the rest of that stuff. So Drupal, Joomla, Moodle, okay, Elg, to some degree, it's a content management system of sorts. Go and use these, right? And save yourself months of work.
Yeah, and that's not to say that HTML editors no longer have any function. I still use Dreamweaver. I use it almost daily. But for me, it's a small slice of the pie. To come out of some program with that being the focus of web development is going to leave you lacking some important skills, I think. I did want to backtrack a little bit and mention something Steve had mentioned in the chat room, that there are professional development centers here in New Hampshire, like the Seacoast Center, that provides open source software training, face to face and by video conference. And open source, as we've mentioned it a couple times, but is something that we are certainly very interested in using, implementing, promoting, and suspect that that's kind of the way things are going. So there are great professional development possibilities out there that we will continue to hopefully discuss.
It would be really nice actually to have a list of ones that have been like where we've had corroborating evidence that they actually have a good program and put them up on the site somewhere and say, okay, you know what, this is a list. There may be other ones, and we're not saying they aren't, but these are the ones we've had confirmed by people who have said that that it's a good place to go, because it'd be nice to have a place to turn when you're asking those questions.
And I should also mention that I'm looking forward to hopefully soon visiting Steve's open source center and helping them to start doing some kind of webcast,
Woohoo!
which would certainly lend itself to some professional development as well. And if they're already video conferencing, I mean, in a way, it's a step back, but it's a good method of collaboration. All right. Anything else?
With this show, what I was hoping to do is pack it all in to a short, as short little description as possible. We didn't do wikis. We didn't actually say where to go. Where would you go for wikis, Jeff?
If you're going to host it on your own kind of server, then go to wikimedia.org and you can download the software there. Or there are alternatives, TikiWiki and PBWiki. There are, however, a number of web-based wiki services that are probably more user-friendly, and I'm not all that familiar with them. As familiar as you probably are, Dave.
Other than PBWiki?
Well, isn't there also Wiki Spaces?
Yeah, there's Wiki Spaces and there's like Wiki Home and there's a bunch of different ones. You really can't get